Tyke Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Over 5 days during the summer of 1967, rioting and civil unrest tore apart the city of Detroit. The riots left 43 people dead, thousands injured, and more than 2,000 businesses burned or looted.
Detroit, a new film by Catherine Bigelow, tells the story of the unrest, but in particular the events that transpired at the Algiers Motel. That's where three young African-American men were murdered by police and nine other people, seven black men and two white women, endured brutal beatings.
This film is not your typical feel-good summer flick, as both film critic Dave Lurson and Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski can attest.
Bigelow is known for films such as Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker, and the intensity and pacing of Detroit is not dissimilar to her war films. Lurson starts with an excerpt of his review.
Was the violence that erupted in Detroit in July 1967 a rebellion or a riot? The words chosen can signify your perspective and interpretation. In director Catherine Bigelow's gripping enactment of those events, Detroit, the rebellion, sparked by a genuine pushback at oppression, lapsed into a riot of theft and unthinking destruction without entirely losing sight of the frustrations fueling the unrest. The events depicted by Bigelow and her longtime collaborator, screenwriter Mark Bowl, have been prosecuted and litigated several times with conflicting testimony and unsatisfying verdicts.
Detroit by Catherine Bigelow. Her work is typically very visceral. It takes audiences to uncomfortable places. So what was your impression of the style she took on for this film? Because it kind of took on feature slash documentary. It had an entirely different introduction.
Yes, the introduction was kind of curious, a sort of painted animation providing some historical backdrop to the great migration of African Americans to urban centers in the North. I'm not sure if that was entirely necessary or not, but she did a very good job of weaving the documentary aspect of it into the film. I mean, through much of the movie, you hear newscasts of the time, genuine, you know, coverage on network news or the radio. You sometimes see network TV coverage of these events, and it works very well as part of intensifying the reality, or the sense of reality of the experience. I mean, it took me back to these very kind of sweaty summers of the past. Most people didn't have air conditioning, and you know, the environment of feeling trapped in a ghetto. I think that she depicted this very viscerally, very clearly. There's a sense of confinement, the sense of frustration, the sense of wanting to break down the walls, I think was very clearly felt.
She starts the film with kind of the precipice of the riots with the breaking up of a after-hours party. But ultimately, the Detroit riots were 5 days of civil unrest that left 43 people dead, thousands injured, and 2,500 businesses burned or looted. We have that quick overview to begin with, but then we go to the single story of the Algiers Motel. So do you think this was a better way to try and encompass the feelings and circumstances of such a big event? Or do you think the title Detroit is a little too broad? Should it perhaps been the Algiers Motel?
Well, I think the Algiers Hotel became the single most infamous incident out of the larger question of what happened in Detroit at that time. So Algiers Hotel, I don't know. I mean, again, you have to think about the marketing department and what sort of things. What would the Algiers Hotel mean as a movie name as opposed to Detroit? I'm not sure what Detroit means as a movie name to most people, but I think maybe Catherine Bigelow may have pushed for Detroit as the title because even though the Algiers Hotel, she spends most of the running time of the movie in that location, exploring that particular event. It was part of this bigger situation, which she does kind of map it out for us before getting to the hotel. It's interesting what people who were not alive at the time make of any of these things. I mean, at roughly the same time when the Detroit upheaval took place, there was rioting or rebellion, if you will, in Milwaukee. On a smaller scale, fewer deaths, less destruction, but Milwaukee was a smaller city. I mean, so I have memories of this, seeing smoke on the eastern horizon and National Guard troops with guns driving in Jeeps through the streets and so on. It was a time of great tension and upheaval. And again, the movie depicts this very clearly. There were riots or rebellions, upheavals of this kind in many cities across America at the time. Detroit may have been, along with Watts a couple of years earlier in Los Angeles, the two signal events of its type.
Do you think that is also part of the goal? I can't attest to how long this movie was in the works of being made, but to make a film surrounding these circumstances so that it's not forgotten, because there is a huge part of the audience seeing this movie that, as you mentioned, were not alive to remember this.
Right. I think that there is often a tendency in looking back on American history to forget about all of the unpleasant things and just paint a very nice tableau of social progress and democracy and the founding fathers and all this kind of stuff. I mean, this movie has many allusions to things that happened prior to 1967. One of the cops in this movie refers to an even more forgotten incident. There was a huge riot in Detroit, a racially based riot during World War II, 1943, and it's alluded to very quickly. You can blink and miss it. But this movie is full of those kinds of allusions that would help us to think maybe a little bit more broadly about some of the more unpleasant aspects of this country's history and unresolved aspects of it. I mean, basically, the problem confronted by the movie Detroit has to do with things that are still in the news today. Accusations of racist and brutal police tactics, the reaction by the African-American community or the multiple reactions of that community to the situation they find themselves in. I would say, you know, having grown up, you know, in this country, that racism is less evident now than it was in 1967, where it was very hard to escape the sense of it. But it's still here, quite obviously. It hasn't gone away. And it remains, you know, one of our, you know, pressing social problems.
This movie is also made up of a large ensemble cast with not necessarily one person as a star actor, though marketing may portray it as such. I mean, John Boyega, known for his recent Star Wars fame, plays a character, Melvin Dismukes. But, you know, there's such a broad scope of people, and it follows a big event that involves many. So do you think there wasn't as much room for humanizing moments beyond, you know, essentially the torture scenes?
Well, I think that we get a good sketch of a lot of the characters in this movie, the singing group, the Dramatics, who were, you know, a real group, you know, went on to have some hits later on. We get the sense of what they were trying to do. This was their hoop dream, basically, to sing their way out of poverty. So you get that. The Dismukes character, who was based on a real person also, you get this sense of the person trying, in the Spike Lee sense, to do the right thing. He saw himself as some sort of mediator between the two sides here, and, you know, as the movie portrays him, he failed, you know, at doing this. He became the spectator to a horrible event that he couldn't control. The police officers in the movie, we get a little bit of a sketch of their personalities. And the department as a whole, I mean, we do find that there are some people in the Detroit Police Department who seem to conscientiously want to do their job to serve and protect, and others who really don't want to serve and protect a large part of the people, the community that they were supposed to be policing. So I think that the movie succeeds at providing us with a range of personality types realistically drawn. I'm glad that there wasn't one star figure, because that would be a very Hollywood cliche kind of thing. There's the star who somehow saves the day or is the focal point of attention. And there really wasn't a person in reality in the Detroit upheaval who was the focal point of attention. It involved thousands of people. And the movie does get that across.
Now, the actors are going through one thing as well as the audience, but you and I, as audience members, as white audience members, are not going to feel the same way as other audience members. And I came across some reviews, mainly by black publishers, that thought the movie itself and the drawing out of the scenes was too much to tell, or that it perhaps wasn't necessarily Catherine Bigelow's story to tell, you know, because as you mentioned before, it's a reflection of what is still happening today,
right,
and the cycles going on. And a quote from a review says, "We are constantly reminding the world that Black lives matter and, as such, requesting that allies outside of Black folk do the same. Bigelow is taking that on, but you have to wonder, is this her story to tell? But also, this is Hollywood, so was she in the position to tell the story first?"
Well, she was in the position to tell the story first, perhaps. I don't know. Again, you know, there are African American directors with credibility. You know, Spike Lee could have made a movie about Detroit, I suppose, just to name one example. I mean, the problem I have with that line of thinking is it basically comes down to Catherine Bigelow should not be doing movies with male characters either, then, right? A Jew should not do a movie about non-Jews. I mean, a Norwegian shouldn't do a movie set in China. I mean, you start going down that way, you find that there's a denial of the act of imagination and sympathy that is key to any kind of art form. So, yes, Catherine Bigelow's perspective on this might very well be different than an equally talented African-American director trying to tackle the same project. But I don't think that invalidates what she did, because I think that she tried very much to hew to the historical record of it. And I don't think that she can be accused in any way of trying to soft pedal what happened, which might be the kind of thing that a typical Hollywood director might want to do, just because, you know, it's too unpleasant to watch this and maybe it will repel, you know, it's not a good date movie, you know, whatever it kind of calculations might go into it. I think that she took a very uncompromising approach to it. What would an African-American director have done differently? Well, I mean, that assumes that every African-American director thinks exactly the same way and would make exactly the same kind of movie about Detroit. So, no, I don't find that to be valid. What I would hope will happen is that more and more in the future, African-American filmmakers and screenwriters will be able to tell the kinds of stories they want to tell. And this has begun to happen in Hollywood. Things are opening up, maybe slower than we might like. It's happening, though. We could say the same thing about women. Catherine Bigelow is making movies that 25 years ago would have been considered untypical for a woman in Hollywood. I mean, she really, if you begin to look at the filmography, has been doing movies that are more associated with stereotypically male directors or male subject matter, war, Cold War submarine adventures, crime movies, the post-Al-Qaeda war on terror, the American occupation of Iraq, and the situation of GIs on the ground there. You know, she's not making, you know, romantic comedies about, you know, 20-somethings in Manhattan in love. I mean, she's, you know, pursuing a much different path. And I think, you know, by and large, doing a very fine job of it.
I agree. She's very deliberate and really, you can tell that she invests a clear undertaking with the film she produces. And the fact that this was a, quote, summer film released amidst those romantic comedies and other things like that, I found also interesting. But do you think it being released in the summer will give it enough legs to still resurface come award season? Do you think that this is a film that will be nominated for anything such? Or do you think just the fact of the movie that is made will be able to extend its life simply by word of mouth?
It's whoever decided upon the release date is running a risk of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences members, who have a memory span not much longer than a fly or a mosquito in many cases, that they'll forget about this movie when it comes time to nominate things, because typically they seem to forget about most films released before Labor Day. There's also the problem for it that Dunkirk was released in the summertime, and Dunkirk, you know, is the one movie from the first half of the year, or wherever we are now, that seems to have some Oscar buzz right from the get-go, and it did great box office. So I think that Detroit has some challenges facing it at Oscar time. I would think that enough Academy members might want to honor maybe the screenplay, at least, because of the subject matter. Again, the lack of one central star will probably exclude it from some of the actor categories, although maybe supporting actor. I mean, there could be some of that. Director, I mean, Kathryn Bigelow was the first woman to win an Oscar as director. So I guess she has that in her favor. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the events of Detroit took place in the summer, so maybe they decided to release it on the anniversary 50 years later from the event. Would it be a good Labor Day movie, post-Labor Day movie? I think you would have upped the odds of more Oscar nominations had they postponed the release by a month or a month and a half. But what's done is done.
Right. And as you mentioned, you know, it's not your typical date movie or a feel-good summertime movie, but would you recommend all people see this?
Well, if you have any interest in the country we live in, I guess, yeah, put it that way. If you want, I mean, you know, I mean, people and all of us at times want to escape from the unpleasant reality of everyday life or national problems or whatever. And I understand the impulse to that. I do that too. But I think that all of us, you know, should be prepared to kind of look out the window and see, you know, some of the bad things that are going on, that have gone on, to measure, you know, a movie about bad events from 50 years ago against what's going on today and deciding, you know, to what degree have we made progress from that time, what still needs to be done. So, yeah, I think that if you have any concern about these things, you should go see this movie. And if, you know, you really want to entirely, you know, shut out the world, you know, then you're not going to enjoy it anyway.
Well, Dave, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Lake Effect film contributor Dave Lurson is the arts and entertainment editor of the Shepherd Express and the author of its I Hate Hollywood blog. He spoke with Audrey Nowakowski.